Today's episode is brought to you by Fire Facilities. Make training count with their custom-made, all-steel live fire training facilities. Their made-in-the-USA towers and burn rooms are the best for preparing, responding, and surviving the challenges you face every day. Today's guest is Todd Shepard. Now, Todd is a third-generation firefighter, and he's a 20-year veteran of the fire service. He's also the founder and owner of Forge Fire & Company. He does live fire instruction. He also specializes in forcible entry, search, victim removal, ventilation, building construction, downed firefighter rescue, first responder self-defense, and so much more. Now, you may know that Todd was a former MMA fighter, but did you know he's a lifelong martial artist? He's boxed Golden Gloves, black belt in American kickboxing, purple belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and also Gracie BJJ Combatives certified. He's a hell of a guy. We have an absolute blast on this podcast. And if you haven't seen the promo for this yet, you got to go find it. It's awesome. So with that, Todd Shepard. That people like to say this kind of shit and berate you and call you dumb because that's how they were treated. And plus, they probably don't know how to do it any better anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
My two cents.
Yeah, absolutely. We're past the day and age where we're going to berate people and treat them like shit as rookies. I mean, we have to learn to build these, you know, everybody up, and the culture needs to be reinforcement of growth. And I'm not saying there doesn't have to be discipline in the fire service. There absolutely needs to be discipline. But the whole culture of shut up, you're a rookie, only talk when you're spoken to, yelling people at people because they're a rookie, berating them, calling them out because they don't know something and they're brand new, that kind of bullshit has to stop. Because, you know, if you ask me the question with martial arts and fighting that kind of ties into the fire service, that mesh of, if you analyze every world champion or any professional fighter in the world, go back and look at their records, and especially boxing, you can look up, Mike Tyson's about to fight again. I don't know why, but huge respect to him. I mean, there just shouldn't be fighting.
Okay, so let me ask you this. We're doing a timeout. Who's winning that? Is it going to be Jake Paul or is it going to be Mike Tyson?
Here's the sad reality. People are probably going to hate me for saying this, but, you know, Jake Paul, as much as I dislike him, is starting to prove himself. And here's what you can't discount. You can't discount youth and eagerness. And he definitely has those. And he's definitely approaching all of his fights with fighting people who are past their prime and using the name to their advantage. And Mike Tyson, I'm not saying any disrespect to Mike Tyson. Huge fan. One of my boxing idols. But he's 57. I'm 43. You know, I feel old. I can't imagine 57 trying to fight a young 20-something-year-old kid who is full of piss and vinegar and training. The kid's a billionaire. He has professional coaches training him 24/7, and he wants it. So he's proving the fight industry wrong. People thought he was a joke, and to some degree, you know, he might be to some degree, but he's definitely putting in a lot of effort to prove that he is a decent fighter. But man, I still would call Mike Tyson winning, but I think that Jake Paul, with youth on his side, I see people saying Mike Tyson's going to destroy him. I don't think that's the case. If you watch Mike Tyson or Roy Jones Jr. A couple years ago, it was not a very good fight. And they were amazing fighters. I mean, Roy Jones.
Iron Mike's just got to get you that one time.
Mike Tyson only needs to hit you once, and the last thing to go, we all know this in striking and boxing, is your power. But the problem is his age and his stamina and our techniques, even with the fire industry. Once our stamina goes, our techniques start to fade, and that's the key is, and he definitely has the basics and everything down to the nth degree, but like, you know, his his downfall is going to be if he can keep up with a 20-something-year-old kid, you know. And I think his experience can. He can – experienced fighters can slow a fight down and make the fighter fight to their fight. And I think if Mike Tyson can do that, he can control the fight. You know, Bernard Hopkins did that very well. Floyd Mayweather did that well. And, you know, Floyd Mayweather was a master at discipline and a master at making people fight his type of fight. And that's what made him win. And I think Mike Tyson is no different than that. So I think, you know, I think Mike Tyson's going to come out on top. Do I think he's going to come out and knock him out in 10 seconds like people think? No, I don't. You know, it's not prime versus prime. That's the problem, you know, so...
Well, anyway. I learned back in the 90s not to buy any Mike Tyson fight on pay-per-view. You just learned. You're like, no.
Well, he's definitely more mentally stable now, you know. I am a huge fan of Mike Tyson. I think he's definitely with and this isn't for everybody, but you know, he's now into, you know, which has helped him smoking weed, and he says it helps him. He's definitely a night and day different person, and he credits it to marijuana and mellows him out. And I think that the new Mike Tyson that we've seen for the past 10 years is definitely a better person. He's not going to eat your children and bite your ear off. But I don't want
I
him
broke
to try.
My back.
Yeah.
That's my favorite one.
Jake Paul is young. He's got youth on his side. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see, but you know, that's the problem with the fight industry, or even, you know, bridging the gap with the fire industry is like, you know, that looking at Mike Tyson, people still look at him as the 18-year-old kid that won the world championship. And the fact of the matter is that he isn't. So if you tie that to our tactics and old heads that are in the fire service that say, oh, I don't need to learn anything, or I've been on for 37 years or whatever it is, they tie it back to what they learned 37 years ago, and they still think they're that. And that's where it gets dangerous, and we're past that. So tying those two things from the fire service to the fight service, you know, fight industry is like, you know, we have to be willing to analyze ourselves and go, okay, you know, I'm a firefighter that's, you know, 63 years old or whatever age I am, and I went through fire school whenever, 30 something years ago. The tactics have changed, the industry's changed. So you can't sit back and rely on, I'm going to sit in my recliner and I don't need to train. I don't need to do this. I've been working here for this long, when it doesn't work that way anymore.
No. I mean, I've said it here before too. It's there's 30 years of experience, and then there's 30 consecutive first year experiences, right? I know I work with people that if I wanted to learn exactly how it was to fight fire in the late 80s, early 90s, just talk to them. And that's because they still do that shit. You know, it's the same thing. Well, because it comes down to basing our success on lack of failure.
Yeah.
If they haven't killed themselves or somebody else with their tactics, well, obviously they're doing the right thing. But, you know, the challenger, a special challenger proved that's not even a real thing. I've noticed, and I've kind of got my head around this a little bit better, is that there are some departments that are in this vacuum. They don't allow any information in. They don't go to conferences. They don't support their people doing that. So it's basically, hey, we've always done it this way. Nobody's really died. I mean, we haven't killed too many firemen. So this is the way we're going to keep doing it. And they're resistant to change. They resist the new information. They resist these new tactics and strategies based on science, simply because I think my opinion is that they're egocentric. They don't want to say to learn something new sometimes means that you did something wrong in the past, which is not true. You did everything you could at the time.
Yeah.
But it drives me nuts that there's so much great free. I keep bringing up FSRI.org that. It's UL has done so much. They've saved so many firefighters' lives and so many civilians' lives, but they don't get any credit for it. And it's all free. You just go on there and you learn it, and you can practice around the firehouse, but people don't really want to do that. It drives me nuts. I want to talk, switch gears a little bit about 1403, because I know you have a strong opinion on live fire. But before we go there, I want to ask you something. As somebody that knows nothing about mixed martial arts, if you were to come at me, could you get through this? Do you think you could actually get anywhere near me with this kind of defense? I mean, I don't think you could.
Probably not, especially with that watch. You know, as soon as I hit that big watch, it's going to break my hand, you know.
Part of my plan.
Yeah.
I got an app on there. It says,
I have to go low on you.
Punch Todd. Well, then I just drop it. See, you can't. I'm sorry. It's a wall. I'm John Cena. No. No. If anybody that knows me is listening to this, they're going, I'm pretty sure Jake's a pussy. I don't know why he's picking a fight. Oh, well, because it's over the internet. That's what it is. Yeah.
Well, relating to what you just said about, you know, the fire departments that are in their own bubble and they've always done it this way and you know, they're going to stick to that. You know, there's a lot of people that can coast through a career. There's a lot of fire departments that coast through generations of not really being tested, and you can get the job done. Doesn't mean you're getting a job done well or better or improving. And you know, there's an old study that's been around for quite a while where they did a study on people with self-defense, and the average person that has never been tested or fairly tested in a real fight thinks they will do 400% better in a situation than they actually will. And I truly believe that is the type of fire service you're talking about. That department, they stick in their bubble and they just respond how they're going to respond, but they've never really been tested. Nobody's ever died, like you said. And the fact of the reality is they haven't been pressure tested, and their members haven't been pressure tested, or the department hasn't been pressure tested, and they think they're doing a lot better than they are, or they think they'll do a lot better if that pressure test ever happens, God forbid, where they have a member go down or whatever the case is. So they truly think they're better than what they are, and you have to get outside your bubble. You cannot, for the most part, you cannot keep a department going with just your own inside training and not looking at resources outside and other trainings and analyzing what is out there today. I mean, there's just so many resources and studies and science and training out there. It's why not? Why would you want to? Why would you want to stay in a bubble? You know, it doesn't make any sense.
I've always said, a friend said this to me years ago, and it stuck in my brain. Firefighter's blood isn't free. It costs us a lot, and there's no reason why we should have firefighters dying the same way every time. But we still do, right? We still have firefighters dying the same way. You know, we're dying of heart attacks. We're dying of cancer. You know, we're not dying a whole lot of building collapses. We're really not. We're not really burning up all that much. Yeah. And so if you study the line of duty deaths, implying rescue survey earlier, where people are in the house.
Absolutely. Yes.
That is just a gift from heaven for firefighters. If you don't use that and change your tactics or reinforce your tactics based on what Brian Brush has done for you, then you're crazy. But it's the same thing. I mean, it's out there. It's free. Use it. And don't be afraid to be wrong. And don't be afraid. Like, I'm sure that you went into fights that if you lost, you weren't like, oh, that's it, I quit. You're like, I need to work harder. I need to do this better. I need to reinforce this or reinforce that. By the way, do you like how I'm tying in all this boxing and martial arts? It's not on purpose. It is not on purpose.
Love it. It's right in my wheelhouse.
There you go.
Yeah.
So I do want to talk a little bit about 1403. I know you're a live fire instructor. What are your, so I'm a 1403 credentialed, I work for ISFSI, which is an International Society of Fire Service Instructors. So I get to go around the country teaching 1403. Having taught it for so long, I see all the great things about 1403, and I see some things that need to be changed in 1403. I'd love to know what you think and how you approach it with your trainings.
I think that, you know, to answer this question the best for my mentality and where I am, I think that what I see, and you know, my opinion is not the end all be all. And I think that, you know, The average firefighter I see, whether we put on a training class, whether we put on a conference, whether I'm at a conference teaching, whatever the case is, my travels, my experience, what I see a lot of times is, and it relates to 1403, the average firefighter, the feedback you see on the sheets at the end of the class are the reviews are bigger, hotter fires, more evolutions. We want more training evolutions. We want bigger, hotter fires. And I don't think that makes a good firefighter. I don't. I think keeping in the capabilities of 1403, I think, you know, the standards are set in place to obviously have safety be paramount, and we have to abide by, you know, safety and that being paramount. But there has to be a trade-off with, again, looking in the mirror and having, you know, being real with yourself and understanding that most of the tactics, you don't really need live fire to train in. You can become a very good firefighter supplementing auxiliary training tactics with forcible entry, with search, with stretching lines, with advancing hose lines, with reading smoke, everything A to Z that isn't putting the fire out. So putting
I didn't think you'd say that. I really thought you'd say something opposite.
Really?
I was wrong. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you'd say so.
Excuse me. I keep coughing. I apologize. A lot. I just had a penis shortening surgery again. It makes me cough. So excuse me. sorry. It's my new joke. I like using it. I thought you would say something to the effect of it's too constrictive. You can't really train under 1403 well. So I was wrong, totally wrong. But I apologize for that. So
I do think you can train well.
What would you change at 1403?
Yeah, I do think you can train well. I you know, what would I change? I would change. It would be. And I'm going to come under fire for saying this for some people and some people not. But I do think 1403 should allow for some standardization of use of real victims in a safe manner. How that is applied is obviously generic. I'm generically speaking here. But, you know, I do think that we have to train under live fire situations. We have to be safe. We have to have realistic training applicants and dummies. Training dummies are just not realistic. And then if you want to really throw that into live fire training, I'm going to back up. We don't always have to train live fire. So I'm talking a very small profile of your training. But I do think we have to pressure test putting all the disciplines together to be under stress and have the modalities to remove a real victim and feel what it's like in smoke and fire situation under safe conditions. Right. People miscommunicate or misconstrue that safe means no live fire. But if we're true professionals, live fire is our reality and it's our industry. We operate under live fire and hazardous conditions, and we have to train under those conditions. It'd be like a fighter, professional fighter, not sparring. It's ridiculous. And there's a way to do it and there's a way to not do it. And that's what we have to differentiate. And people are going to disagree with me and people are going to agree, but the people that are going to disagree or agree, there's terrible training and there's terrible conduction of training, you know, the terrible training officers, there's terrible across the board. And then there's really good across the board too. And
sure.
You can't speak in absolutes where we can't get into the weeds in our industry and say, oh, you know, you can't do this under live fire. We threw that out a long time ago because people were dying because of terrible decision-making under live fire training, but now we're all paying the price.
No, that's a good point. And I know, I happen to know a couple of people on the 1403 committee. They've just recently met. They're going to meet again next year. And then the public opinion opens up, I think, in October. So maybe you can help me work this out. Cause I agree with you. I agree. Like what if, you know, you have one end of the your building where the fire's at, but you have a live, you know, a live person, say, on the other side, you know, no imminent heat problems. But how would you protect their airway? That's the part I keep coming back to, because if you put them on an SCBA, well, then basically you're just doing RIT training. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So yeah. I've wondered that myself. Now, do you know or have you met Dave Mellon?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Trained with him a bunch. Yeah, I love Dave. Yeah.
So, yeah. So, yeah. So he, yeah, I, you know, there you go. I mean, he does it, and he does it well. I love Dave, and when I teach 1403, and people bring him up in my classes, when we get to that part, says no live victims, I'm like, oh, you, Dave Mellon, I'm like, yes. So I, as a 1403 instructor, absolutely do not support that. With that being said, I would go to any of Dave Mellon's classes in a heartbeat. You know, he's the kind of guy that's, sorry, what's going on? He's the kind of guy that's, I mean, he's putting himself out there for us. He's putting himself in danger for us. He's being that guy. Could everybody do what he's doing? Probably not. But look, yeah.
Are there ways to train these modalities without smoke and fire? Yeah, absolutely. We have to actually get proficient in dirty drags and victim removal and all sorts of tactics that are you know, realistic and going to create success for us to get remove that victim. And we can do those tactics without smoke and live fire mostly, but right. We're not mostly, and we can fine tune those, but then we are not, if you can't do it under smoke and live fire, then I'm not saying we have to have heavy fire, heavy heat, heavy smoke, but we have to pressure test ourselves. And
sure.
Protecting your airway, I'm going to botch it because, you know, I use them, but I don't remember the name of them wholeheartedly. But it's I think it was called the Last Resort, you know, filter that you click into your. So they're just going to wear a mask and have the Last Resort filter that came out, I don't know, 15 years ago. I always carried them in my gear, and we use them a lot in training. And they filter. There's a study they did where it filters out everything. And
oh wow,
they probably changed their name. I don't remember. I bought a shit ton of them, and we used them. We use them quite a bit, and they're just in foil packs. You click them into your face mask, and they filter everything out. Those work very well. But I get what you're saying. It's a hard thing to train, and we have to protect ourselves. I've been no different than Dave Mellon. I've put myself out there with nothing on, and it's terrible. But at the same time, and I regret it every time. But you know, there's a
regret it every time.
I do, and but there is a level of letting people know that the reality of removing a victim that is a real victim with less or no clothes on is a very difficult situation unless you've trained realistically on it. Now, again, we can do the much of that training without the live fire and smoke factors, you know, which obviously leads into fake smoke, but you know, there's not a lot, if anything, I really would change on 1403, to be honest. I think that, you know, those parameters are in place for safety, and that's obviously important. And, you know, I think that there's much bigger proponents in the fire service that we need to adopt and change rather than focusing on live fire training or what's not in live fire training. I think there's so many other things we can pick a case at to really nitpick and improve, to be honest.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I agree. There's not live fire does not need to be part of all of our training. There's some things that are just best not in live fire. With that said, I'm pretty open-minded about doing whatever we can to make the fire service better. And like I said, the few people that I do know on that committee are very progressive, very aggressive, and they're doing everything they can to balance that out. And we do have a voice. Like I said, you can do something on the public opinion and put it out there. I know I'm going to put something in there. The thing that I don't like is admin based, basically, where it says to be the instructor in charge, you have to be a level two instructor, which I don't think it should be. I think it should be level one. You know, it'd be great if you are, but I think that that really ties the hands of a lot of departments and a lot of people that want to do live fire, but they don't have any instructor twos. And sometimes it's just not that simple to say, okay, you go become an instructor two. You know, it's like you can make anybody an EMT, but you can't make everybody a paramedic. It's just two different animals, but that's me. Before we go to the last subject, I want to ask you, I want to tie back to fighting again. Let's say it's about midnight at a bar and you see me over there. I'm wearing a really tight T-shirt. I've said something disparaging against you. You don't want the smoke is what I'm saying. Right? Would you agree? Would you agree that I'm very physically? You're laughing too much. I'm very physically. Okay, just making sure. That's going to be my transition into the last thing. So, if you notice, fine, sir, up in that corner it says fire facilities, because my podcast is sponsored by Fire Facilities, makes fantastic training towers. I happen to know of another company that makes really good training towers too. Do you have any idea who I'm talking about?
I don't. Yeah.
So Forge Fire and Company, you make training towers. Now, here's one of the things I love, and I'm not trying to go back and forth with fire facilities like I'm trying to like be that guy. But one thing I love about fire facilities is the exact same thing I love about your company, made by firefighters for firefighters. Tell me, how did you come? How did this start?
Well, you know, third generation firefighter, you know, my grandfather was a firefighter and a deputy sheriff in small town. And then my father became a firefighter. He didn't want to be a firefighter at first. He actually wanted to be in law enforcement. He went through the military, got drafted, went to, you know, Vietnam. And then when he got out, he became a firefighter in Vietnam, still had the chance to be law enforcement, ended up getting employed briefly at the FBI, didn't like that, went back to the fire service and found his calling and wholeheartedly thought he was going to be in law enforcement. And then come to find out he sleeps and breathes the fire service still to this day. 70-something years old, is in the fire service, and he started a company called Fire Force. And, you know, when I became a firefighter, I started to get enough experience to start helping with my dad's company. And his specialties were more into, you know, he was a very good fire instructor, very, very good fire instructor, structural, but he also was in the Air Force for our firefighting, and his specialty was our firefighting, aircraft rescue firefighting, and we gravitated
same to here, that. Bro.
Yeah, and so he kind of pioneered. He pretty much is the one that pioneered mobile aircraft rescue firefighting props. Started building his own back in the 70s and 80s, and that morphed into what it is. You know, where it went with Fire Force, and then as I just gained more and more experience, I came on and started gravitating my experience and my thought process with structural firefighting and my strengths into where we went with, you know, Fire Force. And then ultimately, I branched off and started Forge Fire off of that. And it's just a spinoff, same thing, but it's what we do is just, you know, building forceful entry props, roof ventilation props, training buildings, training towers. But I never meant to get into this. I actually was just, I say our DNA, our company DNA is built into instructing. And I still teach and instruct to this day. I love it. And our DNA is built on that. And I built my first forceful entry door simply because I wanted the most realistic training door that we could teach off of. And I hated telling people, hey, do it on this door, but you can't do it. You know, in real life, it's going to be this way, but on this prop, you can't really do it that way. So simulate doing it in this manner. And I never really liked telling people that. So I talked to some of my instructors and said, man, I think I'm going to try to build my own training props, because my dad and I, we always built all of our training props. He taught me how to weld. He welded. We made full-scale mobile aircraft rescue simulators. We built in our own shop and traveled them across the country. And from building those and learning how to just be creative and weld and build different props, it just morphed into I decided to build my own forcible entry door and build in what I thought would encompass and reinforce the basic tactics that would help people do it right and correct their training tactics and do it correct. But I ended up coming out with a forcible entry door quite a long time ago, and then everywhere I went, it just people asked to buy it. And at first,
now, is this the Alpha door? Is that the first one you made? Is the Alpha?
No, that's Alpha door is like freaking 5.0 of all of them. It still has the core. The Alpha door still has the core of what we started with, which is the real crush area, the quick connect lifting wheels that move the prop. I just basically took what
I see that. I felt, that's badass.
Yeah, we really get a lot of good feedback, but I went everywhere teaching with it, the first iterations of my doors, and everybody kept saying, man, I love this thing. Can we buy one? And I just said, sure, I'll build you one. And I just kind of morphed into that. And it just kept growing from there. And I have a very creative mindset, and I just always, my brain never turns off. I'm sitting in my shop right now. This is my home shop, which is my R&D shop. And it's a full scale welding shop. It's 10,000 square feet now. And I just sit here and come up with different props and, training ideas and put them to life.
I'm looking at the Alpha door. And I want everybody to go to ForgeFireAndCompany.com. Check out the Alpha door. Badass, right? You look at it, you're like, I want it. I need it. I love how you can move it around. But then I want you to go and click the Bravo door. That thing is intimidating. That looks badass as well. That thing looks like it. This looks to me like if you wanted a door that you could not force. You wanted, that looks like a tough one.
And it's the Alpha door. We just renamed it. It's the Alpha door. We just bolted into our training building, so it's the same prop.
Look at that thing. It looks like it'd be well. I see what you're saying, but it looks intimidating. You got Apex roof fit prop. You got a mobile Apex roof fit prop. Let's look at your training structures here. I was looking at them earlier. You got so many options. I mean, honestly, you could, if your goal is to have some great fire training, C-cans, Connex boxes, you have so many different ways to do this. Now, I see one called the Colony in the Colony 2. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Is that have anything to do with Texas? Do we need to tell Chief Scott Thompson?
Yeah, the Colony. The Colony was built for the Colony, Texas, Chief Scott Thompson and Justin Fraze and all those great guys out there. We built that prop, that training structure for them recently. And then my brain never turns off. So I made a part two of where I would go with part it. Two. And so, we built that one probably 6 months ago. We built them all over the nation we are just always trying to push the envelope of what bridging, training versus reality, and what can we accomplish with allowing the guys to just reinforce the most realistic basic tactics and then advance it into advanced tactics. Just really bridge that gap of what we focus on. And I think we're obviously heavy into forcible entry, roof ventilation, search, but there's a room for all of us, there's a lot of other builders out there that do a good job too. And I think that's the great thing is a lot of us are putting out some great products and props. And at the end of the day, it's not about business. It's about what our products are doing, and it's helping the community. It's helping train the firefighters. It's helping train the people that are buying our props, and what are they getting out of it? That's the end result. That's the most important.
I'm looking at, my department had Connex style from, 12, 13 years ago. I think it was new, But the problem I ran into with mine was it was always a Connex box. You knew the layout. Now I'm looking at the Colony first level plan, and if you showed me these plans, I would not believe it was a Connex box. It is laid out like a house. You would not, you're not going to go into this and think, well, okay, I'm going to be in a C camp. You're going into a very well laid out plan. And they look badass too. I'm not gonna lie. I want everybody to go here and check these out. And then afterwards go to fire facilities, see what else. See what else we got.
Absolutely.
These look fantastic, brother. And
there's so many great products. There's so many great products out there. There's a lot of companies doing great things, and that's what makes our industry work. Because, you know, there's so many great instructors giving different takes, just as well as there's so many great companies out there putting out their take on what we're trying to accomplish. And again, not speaking absolutes, there's fire facilities, there's other companies out there doing very good things, and they're all contributing to the end goal of what it's all about. The oath we're taking as firefighters, and the end result of creating the best product for to problem solve the people's emergencies. And, you know, we just, you know, our take on it is we just, you know, try to put out the most realistic layouts, and we try to have everything modular so that you can change the different types of layouts and features throughout the life of the prop. And I think that's what our side of where our direction is going. But yeah, there's absolutely room in the industry for a lot. I see a lot of great things always coming out that we're not doing too.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what's great about going to fire conferences and seeing what's out there.
I'm looking at the Mooresville too. So y'all need to listen, go check this out. Look at the Mooresville. That one I really like. A lot of great stuff here, and I hope people go there and check it out. Yeah, I mean, to your point. Yeah, you know, there's plenty of room. You and I were talking prior to about one of the things about fire facility that I like is that red iron steel.
Yeah. You know?
And I'm looking at your stuff, and I love the layout, man. That Colony, I figured that must have been, because I remember Chief Thompson posting, and I looked at that and like, that looks awful good. But yeah. So go check out ForgeFireAndCompany.com. Check out the training structures, forced military doors, the burn props, and of course the training resources. Excellent website, great products. I guarantee you.
Appreciate
I know it. I've burned in your towers. I know I've burned in your towers. I just can't. I go all over, so I cannot tell you.
We have a lot of them out there.
Is it Hawaii? Put them in Hawaii and then send me out there, and I will help you burn out in Hawaii.
Hawaii, if you're if anybody's watching from Hawaii, please hire us. We're still waiting for that one. You know, we did do Miami.
Yeah, it's going to be Greenland.
Miami was great. Miami? We just did Hialeah. So Hialeah's in Miami. That was a great build we did. And the you know, great department, great group of guys, and great weather down there. It's suburb of Miami. That was a fun one we just finished. But yeah, you know. It's really, you know, whether you're in the fire service as a firefighter, whether you're in business like myself and other companies, it's, you always have to have what we call in, like, you know, the fight industry or Brazilian jiu-jitsu is the, you know, you may be a black belt. I have black belts in different disciplines, and I'm a purple belt in jiu-jitsu, but you have to have the white belt mentality always. You have to constantly be striving and looking for knowledge and not think you know everything. And that lends itself to firefighting, business, whatever the case is, as growth as a person. And I think, you know, there's a lot of companies out there and individuals and firefighters doing that very well. And, you know, that's what we're constantly striving for. It's just, I still go to fire conferences and sit through so many lectures I've already sat through and learned new things, or a lecture I've never been to. And, you know, I did 20 and out. I left the fire service 2.5 years ago, and I'm still find myself sitting through lectures all day. And I don't have to, you know, it's just, I want to learn still.
See, I got to correct you. I got to push back on this, because as a newly retired person, I say I left the fire department. I didn't leave the fire service. That I will never, ever, ever retire from. I love it. And when your passion shows through, one of the first times I saw you, I was like, I've got to talk to that guy. And it's been a fantastic conversation. I hope I didn't, I'm afraid I scared you a little bit because I could be kind of fast. I don't know if I'm not trying to intimidate you, but I do want to wrap up with the way we always wrap up on 3-Point Firefighter. And that is, can you tell me the best firehouse prank you've ever played or have had played on you?
I have a pretty good one. We were sitting at the firehouse one day on duty. It was a slow time in the afternoon, drinking coffee. And I had one individual that was on my company kind of bragging about how he was hard to play jokes on and how he wouldn't fall susceptible to, you know, to them. And we're sitting there across from each other in the lounge chairs, and I can see the view of the outside parking lot through the windows, and he doesn't recognize that I sit there while he's talking to somebody else. And this is a long time ago in the day and age of Craigslist, when it was hot and heavy. And I snapped a picture of his Toyota Corolla, his 1997 Toyota Corolla. And I posted it on Craigslist and said his name, posted his real name, his real phone number, and wrote this big long story about how he inherited the car from his grandma. And he's got his use out of this car, and it's time to pass it on to somebody else. And please call me and tell me why you think you should get my car for free. And I'm going to give you my car for free. And as soon as I hit post on Craigslist, and I'm talking like 45 seconds later, his phone didn't stop ringing thousands and thousands of times for the rest of the 24 hour shift. He was pissed, and that was a pretty good one. I feel pretty proud about that one. I feel pretty shitty now that I'm older, because that was quite a long time ago, of the people that probably wanted that car and reading that story and calling him. I never thought about it from that perspective, but now that I'm older, I'm like, shit, man, these people probably needed that car. But
yeah, so mom on food stamps sees it and she's like, oh, my prayers have been answered. And there you are, just kind of being a dick.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He was pissed. He wanted me to pay. He brought his, I almost got written up over it. And then, he went to the lieutenant, and the lieutenant was definitely on his side. He brought in his cell phone bill, his data bill, and said he went over his data, and he tried to make me pay like $300 for his data bill. And
that's awesome. Yeah, that sound effect of that alone is great.
Yeah,
300 back then when you didn't have unlimited minutes.
yeah, when he had, you know, Sprint or whatever the hell it was, and on his flip phone. His phone didn't stop ringing. It was probably 3,000 calls.
I love it. That's a good one. That's a real good one. I like that one. That might go down in one of my top 10 favorites. Well, brother, I appreciate your time on here. I had high expectations that they were all met tonight. So thank you for being on the show. Thanks for sharing everything. I've had a blast. I hope you've had a blast too, brother.
Yeah, I've had a blast, and I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me on. It's a great podcast. I've watched quite a few of yours, so I definitely appreciate you having me on. It's a great thing you're doing, so thank you.
Thank you, brother. It means a lot. You stay safe.
Thank you. You too.
Today's podcast was sponsored by Fire Facilities, industry-leading designers and manufacturers of realistic, built-to-last training structures for more than 30 years. Make your training count. Visit firefacilities.com for more information.